Moringa is actually one of the fastest growing trees in the world. And so we had a really cool opportunity a few years ago with the Clinton Foundation, because they were doing a project to reforest Haiti. And, you know, they were trying to plant like avocado trees and mango trees and cacao trees, which are amazing, but it takes years and years for the farmers to earn income from them. So they found, you know, farmers would get desperate and cut down the trees to use as fuel before they could get any of the fruits of their labor. And so we partnered with them to plant a bunch of moringa trees, which in 3 to 4 months, farmers can start harvesting the leaves and sell them.
Welcome to the Brands for a Better World podcast, the podcast that brings you the stories behind people and products building a more just, healthy, and regenerative future for us all. Tune in weekly, and together, we'll learn why these better products and brands were created, how they're helping fix broken systems, and what you can do to support them. My hope is that you'll discover some new brands to love and get some sparks of inspiration that will help you live your best life. Hi, I'm your host, Gage Mitchell, founder of Modern Species, a sustainable brand design agency helping better brands grow to scale their impact. This podcast is one way we do that. If you like the show, please help it grow by leaving ratings and reviews on your podcast app and by sharing your favorite episodes with your friends. Maybe this will be one of them. On this episode, I'm speaking with Lisa Curtis, founder and CEO of Cooley Cooley, about how moringa is basically super kale, where her passion for this plant came from, how a TV appearance helped her find the right growth path for her business, and the challenges of building a brand around a relatively unknown ingredient. And finally, we wrap up with a rapid round question segment. Enjoy.
Hi, I'm Lisa Curtis, and I'm the founder and CEO of Cooley Cooley Foods, and we are the leading brand pioneering climate smart, community grown superfoods like moringa.
Awesome. I'm excited to have you on the show, Lisa. I've been following Cooley Cooley for a little while and bumped into you at events and stuff. So I'm excited to learn a little bit more about what you do and how you've been doing it, but also to share the story because I know you're also making a lot of impact. So let's dive in. One thought that I had while kind of doing a little research, moringa before the show was sometimes it's compared to kale. And I know that you even on your website have some graphics about like the health benefits compared to kale, right? And I think kale was this like cultural phenomenon where like for a long time, nobody even knew what it was. And then all of a sudden it became somewhat mainstream, sometimes as a joke of like non-healthy food eating people joke to healthy eaters that like, oh, go eat your kale salad or something. But I think the majority of consumers out there know what kale is now. However, maybe they don't know what moringa is. Yet, according to the stats on your website, moringa is basically like super kale. So let's talk a little bit about what moringa is and why people should weave more of it into their diet.
Yeah, I love the comparison. You know, 10 years ago, the largest purchaser of kale in the U.S. was Pizza Hut. And it wasn't on their pizzas. It was actually garnish, decoration for their salad bar. So not even in the salad, just like to make some, you know, green looking stuff behind the salad. We've come a long way since then with kale. And my hope is that we can do this as well with so-called super kale, which is moringa. So moringa is actually a tree. It grows all over the tropics. And the leaves of this tree are amazingly potent. So they, from a nutritional standpoint, you know, most plants are 90% water. And so there's just like a little bit of room for nutrients. Moringa is 80% water. And so there's double the room for so many nutrients. So packed with protein, calcium, iron, vitamins, highly digestible protein, similar to egg or dairy protein. And then on the medicinal side, you know, it's been used in Ayurvedic medicine. It's been used all over the African continent, all over Central and South America for a long time. It's often called the miracle tree or the tree of life. And it has some incredible phytonutrients that can do everything from, you know, help to reduce inflammation, to help to lower our blood sugar and support gut health. So it's a really powerful plant.
That's cool. And I did see the lower blood sugar thing. I looked up on, I think WebMD was talking about the benefits of moringa, and they said that it's used sometimes for treatment of different conditions, like, you know, blood sugar related stuff like diabetes, which was interesting. I hadn't heard of that. How are you seeing, like, whether it's around the world or even the people who do know what it is here in the U.S., let's say, what are you seeing people use it for the most? Is it more the inflammation, the blood sugar, what?
Yeah, it's a really great question. So I would say, like, you know, from a just like everyday consumer, the number one benefit that people feel is when they add Moringa into their diet, they feel more energized. So Moringa has, because it's packed with so many nutrients and also phytonutrients, it just gives your body everything it needs to feel good. So a lot of people add it to their smoothies in the morning or make a latte with it, and it provides caffeine-free energy. But we also have a lot of customers who use Moringa for specific ailments. So especially in Central and South America, Moringa has been used for a long time as a natural treatment for diabetes. And I can't tell you the number of times I've been like doing a demo in store or like, you know, and doing a Costco roadshow, passing out samples, and somebody will come up and like speak in rapid Spanish and be like, yeah, my grandmother in Mexico uses this tree, you know, helps with her diabetes and managing weight. And, you know, she loves it. And I'm so glad you have Moringa here. So we get stuff like that quite a bit.
Okay. Interesting. And I know that you sell it mostly in powdered form. Do people, some cultures just eat it like raw or cooked in its whole form? Like, how are the people usually consuming it?
Yeah. So if you're in the tropics, you know, go pick it off the tree, like get those fresh leaves. You know, it is a tropical plant. So there's certain parts of the U.S., like Hawaii, for example, or even parts of Florida where you can grow Moringa. And, you know, I think if you have access to fresh leaves, like go ham, like fresh Moringa, you can incorporate into even a salad, curries, all sorts of things. You know, for most of us living in the U.S., the easiest way to access Moringa is through a powdered form. And Kulikuli is really careful in the way that we grow and process our Moringa. So it's, you know, not dried out in the sun. We're really, really careful about the level of heat that it's exposed to and really make sure that we have the most nutritious Moringa out there. So, you know, in that processing, you don't actually lose many of the nutrients at all.
Yeah, that's an interesting point too, because I read different things about how to keep all the nutrients in food, right? For example, some people lean towards, if they can't get fresh, they lean towards frozen, because if it's, you know, frozen at the peak of freshness, then maybe more of the nutrients that are in there than if it's canned, where it's been kind of processed and maybe some of the nutrients are kind of taken out in that processing or something like that. But then I've also know that for powdering, like sometimes with the right method of powdering, you can capture, like lock in all those nutrients during the process. You mentioned low heat, for example. So obviously you're doing what you can to keep the nutrients in there. But just for people who are kind of new to this, what are some of the processing methods that people maybe should avoid, either with Moringa or other foods based on what you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, the interesting thing about a lot of these plants is, you know, you want, when you source them, for there to be some sort of kill steps. You want to make sure that you're reducing any of the microbiological activity, because if you have too much of that, you know, that can hurt your health. And so you want a kill step in there. And so that's where we have kind of a low heat steam kill step. And this is like a lot of brands that are selling high quality spices, high quality tea, also have this same form of kill step. And you can often tell based on like the vibrancy of the color and the freshness of the flavor of if it's been processed correctly. Like there's, you know, a lot of folks out there who've got Moringa on the market where you taste it and you're like, oh, it tastes like sort of cooked and kind of like, you know, really bitter. And that is a sign that it's been processed incorrectly. It also tends to look a bit more brown as well.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So looking for the brightness of color, I've heard something similar about matcha tea, like different grades of matcha tea, right? Some are more barista grade or some are more like ceremonial grade, et cetera. And some of it comes down to the color, which maybe, you know, the crop that was harvested or the way that it was processed, I haven't looked into that, but is it similar to that? Like the fresher, more nutrient dense stuff is the brighter, tastier?
Exactly. Yeah. So we've studied matcha processing a lot, because matcha is just green tea. And so it's like how you process it determines what grade it is. And so we process our Moringa is basically like the equivalent of ceremonial matcha. So it's like the highest quality kind of most respect for the leaves and the nutrients. You're trying to keep it all together.
Very cool. Okay. How do you feel about freeze drying? I've been hearing of, you know, some brands claim that they're like freeze dried to lock in that freshness. How does that compare to the low heat steam method you use?
Yeah, I mean, I think to me, freeze drying feels like something that's more commonly applied to fruit and fruit powders. I think when you're talking about dried leaves, like you're tends to be kind of the go-to method of steam and then, you know, milling process.
Great. Okay, cool. And one other question before we dive deeper into the business you're building around Moringa. I'm just super curious about the ingredient itself, but I know that often food ingredients are good when paired with other ingredients. For example, you know, like a rice and beans that completes the protein, or there's certain things that if you eat them at the same time, they help get more absorbed into your body. Is there anything with Moringa that's good to pair it with typically?
Yeah, one of our go-tos is actually cinnamon, because cinnamon also is really great at blood sugar reduction. You know, a lot of people are like, cinnamon, what? It's just like a spice, you know, but it has some pretty cool health benefits. And when paired with Moringa, it is even better at helping to do that blood sugar level reduction. And the flavors pair really nicely. So Moringa has kind of like a green earthiness, like a touch of astringency. And I think the kind of like sweeter earthiness of cinnamon just pairs really well. So that's actually how I eat Moringa every day, is I do a ton of Moringa powder and then a bit of cinnamon in my oatmeal and add a little bit of peanut butter as well. And it's really good. Even my 1-year-old and my 3-year-old also eat it. So toddler
proof. Well, sounds delicious. I like cinnamon just about everything. So cinnamon with the Moringa sounds great. And the peanut butter, et cetera, sounds delicious. So maybe we'll talk about some recipes or something when we talk a little bit more about your products.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've got lots of great ideas.
For now, I'd love to chat about how you discovered Moringa, because I think it's a really interesting story of kind of where you were in your life and how you came across it. So can you talk a little bit more about that discovery of Moringa and then why you decided to launch a brand centered around it?
Yeah, totally. And you know, one thing I always like to say is like, I didn't discover Moringa. Moringa has been used all over the world for such a long time. But I first came across it when I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Niger, West Africa. And I was in this very rural village with no electricity, no running water, you know, no Whole Foods nearby, and found that as a vegetarian, I was mostly eating pure carbs, like just rice and millet every day. And it was a diet that left me feeling really weak and really tired. And so I started asking some of the women in my village, you know, what can I eat to just like give me my energy back and bring my strength back? And they literally pulled these leaves off a tree and mixed them into this popular local snack called Kuli Kuli and said, here, eat this Kuli Kuli Moringa. It'll make you feel better. And I was like, what? Tree leaves? Like, I don't know. That seems a little weird. I've never eaten tree leaves before. But, you know, totally trusted these women. And at that point, I was like, I will eat anything to feel better. And so I started eating this Kuli Kuli Moringa every day and found that it had the most profound impact on my health of like anything I've ever taken prior or since. And it just made me feel so much more energized. I think it gave my body like the protein, the calcium, the iron, and all the phytonutrients that I'd really been lacking. And I was like totally transformed. And I was like, what is this plant? Like, how did it do that? You know, I need to learn more about Moringa. And, you know, basically went to these women and then was like, how can we get more people in this community to eat more of it? Because, you know, I was working at the health center. I was treating malnourished babies every day. It seemed like there was a lot of need for that in Niger. And long story short, you know, they said, I think what any small farmer or anywhere is going to say, like, we're not going to grow a crop that we can't sell. And, you know, Moringa being like kale, the sort of backyard weed, it was not something that they were eating every day. And so they're like, why don't you help us sell it? And if we can create a market for it, then we'll grow more of it and we'll use more of it locally. And we can also earn an income from it. So I was like, sure, no problem. I'll help you do that. You know, I was 22 at the time. I had no idea what I was getting into. And fast forward a decade later, you know, Cooley is the largest Moringa company in the world. We source directly from small farmers across 7 countries and sell really high quality Moringa products in 11,000 stores. So it's been an incredible journey from Peace Corps to grocery store.
I love that summary, from Peace Corps to grocery store. That's great. That's cool. Amazing story, of course. Like, I love hearing how people kind of either came up with the idea for their product or came to learn about a specific ingredient or way of life or whatever, and then got so passionate about it that they decided to share that passion with others. I think that's what makes founder-led brands so much more interesting, I think, to me, but probably to a lot of consumers too, is because there's a real reason behind it. It wasn't just launched because some marketing executives at some giant corporation saw some uptick in interest of a specific thing and then, you know, engineered some product that might appeal to customers, did this testing and whatever. It's like all that kind of way a lot of products we know, household names, were designed. These products, founder-led products like yours, were driven by a pure passion. Like, you found something that was amazing, that really worked for you, and you want to share it with others. So I love hearing those stories. Out of curiosity, you said that they kind of pulled the leaves off and made you a Cooley drink. So that obviously is where your name, the business name, came from. But what was in the drink besides the leaves?
Yeah, so it was a snack, actually. It was a like peanut Moringa snack with some local spices they added to it. And we ended up keeping the name, even though we don't sell a product that's like quite the same as this Cooley peanut snack. Because to me, it was really about this like kind of gateway to nutritional functional foods like Moringa, and how do we build a brand that could really, you know, honor that act of like giving you nutrition that you, really makes you feel a difference, and doing it in a way that's like very much in this community grown, climate smart spirit. So our vision has always been like, how do we really create a brand that enables small farmers to improve nutrition and livelihoods while offering Western consumers these incredible functional medicinal plants in ways that are easily enjoyable.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, speaking of which, what were the first products you launched with Cooley?
Yeah, so the first product we launched was actually a bar. It was something where I came back from the Peace Corps and I was like, what do people eat? Like, for nutrition, and, you know, nobody knows what Moringa is, but like, maybe if we put it into something that's just like makes it really easy to consume, they'll gravitate towards it. So started with Cooley Moringa Superfood Bars, which is a product we still sell to this day. It's definitely not our leading product anymore. It's a pretty small percent of our business, but it is, I think, a good entry point into Moringa. You're getting half a cup of leafy greens in one little bar. And then since then, we've moved on to launch a lot of powder products. So a lot for folks who are making smoothies, and then also gummies, which are another fun and easy way to get Moringa and other medicinal plants into your diet.
Yeah, I think a lot of CPG brands start with an assumption of a specific product that they think might be a good entry point for people to try the product, the ingredients or whatever. And then as they start getting feedback from the community or from retail buyers or whatever, they start realizing maybe there's other formats that people might want it in. So how did you go about deciding to move into powders and gummies after launching the bars?
You know, it was like a little bit random in the sense that we were like, you know, like we could support more farmers if we sold just the powder and not just, you know, the smaller amount that you can fit into a bar. And so we're like, why don't we just test it out on our website and like, you know, throw up some jars of powder and see what happens. And so we did that. And then 2 weeks later, I was actually on MSNBC's Morning Joe. And they were like asking me all these questions about Moringa. And so I was like talking about Moringa, and it was unbelievable. We like blew up our website. Like, my co-founder he's a software engineer by background, and he had to use all of his skills to make sure our website did not go down because we had so much traffic. And like, the results from that sort of inadvertent consumer test were so clear. We had like hundreds and hundreds of orders of the Moringa powder itself, and just like, you know, a much smaller number of orders for the bars, which was great and also terrible because we live in this Amazon era of people wanting like next day delivery. And we were like, this stuff is coming from Ghana. Like, it's going to take us a little while, but we did. We successfully delivered all of them and, you know, sent out a lot of emails explaining like, we're a small brand. Like, here's a photo of us hand packing everything and trying to get it to you. So it was quite the journey.
So did you have to like pause sales for a little bit and just say sold out while you were fulfilling that first rush? Or did you just keep it going and just tried to keep up?
We didn't want to pause anything. We wanted to keep it going. We did start sending out like an email right after folks ordered just to be like, just so you know, it's going to take us a few weeks. Like, we've had an unbelievable spike in orders. And for the most part, I think there was only like maybe like two or three people who wanted a refund. I think everybody else like understood small brand, like we can wait a few weeks.
Yeah. I'm not sure what the two or three people who needed the refund were thinking, but like in most cases, CPG products are not life or death. You know, it's not like getting your heart medication or, you know, something like that. Like, it should be optional. So it's good that most people recognized that and had some patience with you as a small business so you could catch up. So that was a huge spike in sales and kind of helped you realize powders was a good option. Was it just kind of a spike and then it was gone? And then you had to like work on other campaigns to raise awareness and continue the sales? Or did a lot of those people keep coming back? Or did that kind of publicity from the TV show kind of keep carrying sales for a while?
It definitely helped to carry us forward. You know, it was certainly a big spike and then like folks tailed, you know, kind of came down a little bit. But I think we did see like a pretty strong lift in like our overall e-commerce traffic. It, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, I wish we'd been a national brand like in 11,000 stores back then, because then people could have found us in store. But at the time we were super small. We were in like 50 stores in California. So it was really like an e-commerce only thing. Versus actually last year, we were featured on the Huberman Lab podcast. Dr. Andrew Huberman from Stanford talked about Moringa and the health benefits of Moringa. And that was amazing, both from an e-commerce and like a retail velocity standpoint. We saw like a really big spike that lasted for a while too. So it's kind of wild, these like, you know, these media things that can just take your brand to the next level. And they're like, you can, you know, do all the outreach in the world. And sometimes they're just like, it's pure luck that it happens.
Yeah. It's like luck to be in the right situation at the right time, like getting on that TV show, but also preparation in that you were ready to react to the luck or to take advantage of it when it showed up, right? But it is kind of a combination of the two, because you could be ready all day long and never get the opportunity to go on TV or to be on that podcast or something like that, and it won't work. And then you could also have luck but not be able to fulfill those orders and, you know, maybe just get a bunch of backlash from people who got faulty product or bad orders or the order never showed up or whatever. So I think it's a combination of those two, of luck and preparedness. But did you do anything to like create those circumstances that brought that luck? By which I mean like that TV show that you mentioned that helped launch the powders. Like, how do you feel you got on that?
I think that's a good point, in the sense that I'm a big believer that success is, you know, when hard work meets opportunity. And that, you know, it's easy for people to be like, oh, it's just lucky. But it's true that there's a lot that goes into like trying to make that happen. And I think one of the things that I've always had in the back of my mind with Cooly Cooly is like, most people don't know what Moringa is. And most people don't know, I've never heard of Cooly Cooly Foods. But often when they hear about it, they're really interested in the plant and in the story and how we're sourcing it. Like, it's a story that resonates with a lot of people. And so we've, over the years, tried all sorts of different ways to like reach the media and tell our story and see how we can get that out there. And it's something that, especially in the early days, I would specifically block my calendar. Like, I put in calendar blocks every week and do like both media outreach and sales outreach, generally from the like 9 to 11, just like, I'm a morning person. It's like, okay, you know, block the mornings and make sure that I have dedicated time to really focus on this. And something I still try to hold to. I don't, not able to do it every day anymore, but it is something that I think is every day that I do it, the company is better for it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I was just kind of talking to some people and made a LinkedIn post recently about a similar kind of idea of putting in the work to manifest the quote-unquote luck or the opportunities that will come. And I think a lot of people get so busy with their day-to-day work that they're like, I can't do that, you know, PR outreach or the go speak at this event or go network or do whatever that would kind of build some of that buzz and create some future opportunities. And then when the opportunities dry up, they're like, oh crap, I need to go do some of that stuff. But by that point, it's a little too late because some of these things just take time to build up, right? Like the work you're doing right now might pay off in 6 months. Like, you know, this podcast isn't huge, but let's just say some person in some media or something like that sees this podcast episode 6 months from now, and then it could create an opportunity, right? But it's about doing that work little by little every day or every week so that you have a continued flow of opportunities coming in 6 months from now, a year from now, 5 years from now.
100%. And I'm a big believer in ensuring that every day I'm doing something that is in that sort of long-term important quadrant, not just the short-term urgent. Because I think it's so easy as a founder, and especially, you know, we're multi-$1 million in sales, but we're still a team of eight. We're a very small team. And so we all wear a lot of hats. There's a lot of fire drills. There's a lot of things going on. But like, how do I make sure that I, you know, at least spend like 30 minutes a day in something that is longer term and strategic, even if it's a little thing? I think it makes a big difference.
Right. Yeah. I likened it to planting seeds. You know, most people understand that if you plant a seed, there are some crops that will grow fast and you can harvest them, you know, a few months later or something. But there are some crops, like let's say, I think it's an avocado tree, if I remember correctly, where you plant it and you don't even get any avocados on it for years. It takes a while for the plant to mature before it can produce the fruit, right? So I think if you're just always planting seeds, you'll have food in the future. But if you forget to plant the seeds that season, then maybe you're not eating that harvest season. Or if you never planted that avocado tree 5 years ago, you won't have avocados today, right? So I think it's just, if you just keep planting seeds, you'll always have lots to harvest, lots of opportunities in this case.
I love that. It's especially cool in this context because moringa is actually one of the fastest growing trees in the world. And so we had a really cool opportunity a few years ago with the Clinton Foundation, because they were doing a project to reforest Haiti. And, you know, they were trying to plant like avocado trees and mango trees and cacao trees, which are amazing, but it takes years and years for the farmers to earn income from them. So they found, you know, farmers would get desperate and cut down the trees to use as fuel before they could get any of the fruits of their labor. And so we partnered with them to plant a bunch of moringa trees, which in 3 to 4 months, farmers can start harvesting the leaves and sell them. So that was a very cool way of planting seeds in a sort of literal sense.
Yeah, that's really cool. I hadn't thought about it that way. But yeah, you're right. I think the fast growth crop, especially if you're trying to help farmers, makes a lot of sense, right? Because not all farmers have a decade to wait for something to pay off. They need both short-term and long-term investments. So that's really cool. And you also mentioned that it's, you know, most people especially didn't know what moringa was in this country when you started. A lot of people probably still don't. But that's a challenge with a lot of new products or innovative products, is either the product format or the key ingredient or something like that is a bit of a challenge to educate people around because it's something new for them. Beyond your kind of media outreach and stuff, which is a great way to kind of get the word out and help bring people along on that journey, are there any other tactics that you've found to be helpful to help people understand what this product is and how it fits into their life?
Yes. I mean, the tactics have changed a bit as we've grown. I think in the early days, it was all about those demos. You know, I was personally driving around to like every Whole Foods store in Northern California, chopping up little moringa bars, sampling them, swagging out, you know, Whole Foods team members, getting them excited about the product, making sure that after I left, they were going to continue to tell customers to buy Cooly Cooly's bars. That was a huge part of our strategy. And we actually, like pre-COVID, as recently as 2019, we did 400 demos a year in Whole Foods alone.
Oh, man.
Which was wild. Not just us. Thankfully, at that point, it wasn't me doing most of those. We had a whole field marketing team all over the country doing them. And, you know, it's been interesting over the past few years. We've continued to grow. We're in a lot more conventional retailers now, like Walmart and others. And I also think with the explosion of customers shopping online, we've now really started to invest in digital marketing and figuring out, you know, what are different ways that we can really encourage folks to try the product, be that, you know, doing work with a bunch of influencers, doing kind of like some really, you know, great sampler packs on our website and having kind of different marketing campaigns and stories around those. But it definitely has evolved as our brand has grown. But I think the consistent thing is you want to have a drumbeat and you want to have, like, ideally something that you're talking about every month and like figuring out kind of, you know, what is that monthly cadence. We have like a content calendar that we spend a lot of time thinking about, okay, what are we activating at retail? What are we activating online? You know, what like events are we doing around this in person? So our drumbeat has changed, but we're still banging that drum.
Yeah. Yeah. All that makes a lot of sense. One thing that popped into my head that I know some other founders of new kind of products or ingredients have done is sell their core ingredient or their hero ingredient to other brands so they could weave it in their products too, so that there's more than just your brand going out there and educating people about what this thing is. Have you done much of that?
Yeah, we're doing it, a lot of it. We've still do some of it, but we've cut back a little bit. But we had, you know, for a while, we had a cool partnership with Rebel where they had a drink with moringa and matcha, and they actually had Cooly Cooly Moringa listed on the back. And we did another one more recently with a really cool company making dried pineapple with our moringa called Amazi, and they actually won a Nexty award, and we got like some great PR and like did some storytelling around that. So I think there's, you know, a lot of ways that we can do it. For us, you know, it's less of a sales channel and more of like an interesting marketing opportunity. Like we, you know, we do sell moringa. Like we have, you know, probably more moringa than anyone in the US, like in our warehouse at any given time. So we do supply folks, but we're most interested in doing it when there's some sort of like joint marketing that we can do together around it.
That makes sense. And I feel like that's been huge in the CPG industry lately, is a lot of partnerships like that where you make something cool together. Maybe it's even limited edition, but it helps raise awareness for both brands and maybe even just shows how good these ingredients are together. So like that Rebel Herbs one, that seems perfect fit, right? Or any other kind of ready-to-drink product, because I don't think you sell ready-to-drink products, but like partnering with someone who makes functional beverages and doing like a co-branded product with them, I think that makes a lot of sense as a good promotional item that maybe you only do it for a limited time, but it helps both brands kind of get a little bit more awareness.
Yeah, totally.
And I know you said that a lot of people don't know what moringa is, but once they hear the story, they get excited. What is it about the story that gets them most excited? Is it just they're craving more superfoods, or is it that they love the story about how you're helping farmers, or is there some other kind of thing that really that people latch on to?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I think no one goes into the grocery store and says, like, what's the most impactful thing I can buy? Like, you know, what's going to help support right. women in Africa and plant trees? Like, that's not why they look for us. I think they go in looking for, like, what is something that solves my need? And maybe that need is for, like, I need a, you know, snack. Like, I need some chocolate. Like, I need something that's going to boost my energy and, like, give my body the nutrients it needs to feel good. And so I think what we find is that a lot of people are really interested in this idea of food as medicine, and they resonate with the idea that, look, like the future of food isn't just plant-based meat and, like, you know, lab-grown stuff. Yep. It can also be these amazing crops that are used all over the world and maybe haven't made it to the US yet, but can be incredibly nutritious. And so we really think of Cooly Cooly as pioneering the future of food through the plants of the present, because there are so many plants out there that can have a real impact on your health that maybe you just haven't heard of yet. And so I think that's kind of the thing that resonates with folks.
Right. Yeah, I love that. I often feel like the most impactful or sustainable or, you know, healthy stuff are existing products that we've just kind of forgotten about, or existing methods that we've moved away from in the name of kind of innovation or technology advances or something like that. Like a lot of the agricultural movements right now, regenerative organic, for example, that's just the way all farming and agriculture was since the beginning of time, or since the beginning of agriculture up until like the, you know, 50s or something like that, 40s, 50s, 60s, when all of a sudden this chemical monocrop agriculture became the most popular method. And it's just us trying to relearn the way that humans have been growing food since the beginning of time, because we had it right.
And I think,
you know, and we just broke it.
We did. And I also think that, you know, a lot of small farmers around the world still do that. Like, we've had some really interesting discussions over the past few years of, like, with some of our farmer partners of, you know, well, you know, we want to move towards regenerative agriculture. And they're like, what is regenerative agriculture? And we explain it and they're like, that's what we're already doing. Like, we're already growing, yeah, you know, like chili peppers in with moringa trees, and there's like, you know, baobab plants nearby. It's like, that's how you make a great income from a field. Like, why is that anything special? Right. So it's been really fascinating to see that unfold.
It is kind of funny how comical American culture is to other cultures sometimes, when we're like, yeah, we got this cool new innovative thing like organic regenerative food, and they're like, you mean food? You mean food the way
you
the rest
mean,
of the world
farming?
Eats it?
That's how we farm.
Wow,
yeah.
Super innovative, America. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Well, you mentioned that people aren't going into the store trying to find the most impactful product to support, but my theory is that the packaging, marketing, right, the positioning of your product gets people to try it. The quality of your product and how it makes them feel gets them to buy it again. And then the impact or mission is the kind of thing that might get them to spread the word or to continue buying your brand, even if a competitor pops up that's a little bit cheaper or something. So with that said, I know you do a lot beyond making a healthy product. So can you talk about how you're using your business as a force for good and some of your impact certifications and initiatives?
Yeah, exactly. I would love to. So, you know, I think high level sort of certification wise, we're B Corp, women owned and operated. But I think the more meaningful part is, for us, we really believe that, you know, we are here to have a purpose, and that's why Cool Equally exists. And really our purpose is to support small farming communities, help them grow this amazingly nutritious superfood, use it locally, and then earn an income from it by selling it to the US. And so we do a lot to support different grants around, and offer a lot of grants around, you know, local nutrition. So we support some of our suppliers to do school feeding programs where they'll add moringa into the local porridge and, you know, supply kids with that. We also do some support around, you know, access to clean water. Like, there was one of our partners is, you know, located near a school in Uganda where kids were literally spending 2 hours a day taking these big yellow water jugs to and from a like pump and bringing it back to the school so the school had clean water. So stuff like that, where we really invest in these communities and really want to help them continue to improve their livelihoods and to kind of grow with us. And so, you know, from a kind of like stat perspective, we support over 3,000 farmers. We've put more than $6 million directly into the hands of small farmers. We use all post-consumer recycled plastic packaging. And so every year we upcycle the equivalent of 200,000 water bottles through our packaging. And we also reduce, or, you know, have reduced around 300 million kilos of carbon through our tree planting work. So we do a lot. And I think that's the part that gets me up in the morning, gets our team up in the morning, is really how can we continue to grow our business, which will then help grow our impact.
That's amazing. So many things to touch on there. As a fellow B Corp, I tip my hat there. And then I also know we've done episodes on why people should support women-owned brands, because of the inequities in the business system of, you know, less access to funding and other kind of programs like that. So love that you are championing what it means to be a great women-owned business. And then, of course, the supporting your local farm communities, I think that's amazing because I know that as ingredients become popular in the U.S., cultures that grow those ingredients for us often end up not being able to even afford that ingredient anymore, even if it was a core crop of their diet, right? So I think the fact that you're helping them grow this ingredient, but then also helping them be able to enjoy the fruits of their labor and be able to eat the products through your local nutrition grants or, you know, helping in other ways like the clean water and helping them make more money off of crops and all that kind of stuff is all great there too. And then I'm a sustainable packaging geek too, so I love that you're using post-consumer recycled packaging because I know there's a lot of talk right now about the recycling infrastructure being broken in the world, really, but in this country especially. And a lot of that is due to the fact that there hasn't historically been a great market for the recycled content because not enough brands were buying and using recycled content, right? So any brand that, you know, everyone out there listening, if you see a brand using post-consumer recycled packaging, please support that because that creates economy for recycling, which will make it more likely that your plastic containers do get recycled because there will be a market for it. And then, of course, carbon reduction through all your tree planting, like that's super powerful as we're all kind of staring down the future of climate change and looking for ways to reduce. So all amazing things there. So I tip my hat to you on all that. Cool. Well, that's probably a good place to wrap up on that part. Where can people go to learn more about Cooley Cooley?
Yeah. So our website is Cooley Cooley Foods. That's KULIKULIFOODF.com. And we are also available on Amazon. And then we're in, you know, everywhere from Whole Foods, Sprouts, and even places like Walmart. So we're in a lot of stores across the U.S., but certainly our website is the best place to learn more about the brand, learn more about Moringa, and you can also find our store locator there. We actually created a discount code, so for anyone listening to this podcast, you can type Modern Species in your card and nice. Get 20% off.
Very cool. Thank you. We will make sure there's a note about that in the show notes too. Sweet. So I like to wrap up lately with just a fun rapid round question segment. So I'll just dive into those. You can keep your answers super brief if you want or go into a little bit more detail. I'm not super stickler for the rapid round focus, but just kind of pop through some more questions. So I'll start with, besides Moringa, what's your favorite superfood right now?
Yeah, I have gotten really into mushrooms. Like the rest of the world, but specifically interested in mushrooms as a way to kind of boost my morning tea since I am very caffeine sensitive, but have found, you know, certain types of mushrooms are really beneficial to boosting energy. I also, you know, do my Moringa lattes too, but I also like some chai mushroom lattes to mix it up.
Nice. Do you have a favorite brand you want to shout out for the mushrooms?
Yeah, I really like Mudwater. I really like that they're not a mushroom coffee since I'm so caffeine sensitive. I don't do coffee. And so I like that it's a chai.
Very cool. Yeah, they've been blowing up lately too. Not that they haven't been putting in the hustle for a while now, but I've just been seeing them pop up a lot more in all my media. So good for them. Okay, what's your favorite unhealthy treat, meal, or snack?
I love chocolate. And I am specifically a huge fan of Alter Ego's new truffle thins. Their mint one is just so good. And it's like my little end of the day. You know, I survived a day of work and we're parenting and get some chocolate.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with darker chocolates, it's not exactly unhealthy, right?
It's
so
not terribly
it's kind
unhealthy.
Of healthy,
yeah.
You know, in a way. It's basically health food. And thanks for shouting out one of our long-term clients, Alter Eco. And yes, I agree. Their truffle thins are amazing. And the truffles in general, too. I don't eat them all the time, but I do love indulging in those because if I get a box, they kind of disappear quickly. So I try not to have them in the house too much.
I know. I know. I only get a box when I have friends in town. Otherwise, I just eat them all myself.
Awesome. Okay. So what's the biggest benefit of being recognized as a Forbes 30 Under 30 leader?
Yeah, that's been a really surprisingly cool one where, like, after I got Forbes 30 Under 30, then just like other people started inviting me to different, you know, to different kind of awards, like, oh, you should apply to this, you should apply to that. And so I ended up getting like a Muhammad Ali Award. I got, you know, Inc. magazine's like top 100 female founders. So I think it lifted my visibility as the CEO in a nice way that then also kind of lifted awareness about Cooley Cooley. So yeah, it's been fun. Even though I'm now, you know, closer to 40 than 30, it's still still listed on my resume for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's not something you need to stop bragging about just because you age out of it. I think so many entrepreneurs have that on their ultimate goal list is to get 30 under 30. And then if they don't get that 40 under 40, they don't get that. I think there's now a 50 over 50 or whatever list. So you got to keep going. But it's a good note, though, that getting press helps you get more press, right? So it's like an exponential value of getting some recognition, which is really cool.
Exactly.
All right. So who's an impact-driven leader you admire and why?
Yeah, I really love Jacqueline Novogratz. She's the founder of the Acumen Fund and wrote a really great book called The Blue Sweater. And I actually read her book while I was in the Peace Corps. And then like the next time I got to the Capital City, I emailed her about like, you know, how I just like resonated with that so much and how I was like, you know, kind of living in this small village and saw all these like, you know, clothes. And her story was her blue sweater that she had donated, then she saw on a kid somewhere on the African continent. I can't remember the country, but so I was kind of like, you know, told her this and I emailed her out of the blue, just like found her email online. And she actually replied and had like a really kind response and like encouraged me to keep going in my impact journey and like offered some resources. And to me, you know, I always aspire to be somebody who's like made it to the top, but doesn't hesitate to like reach back and pull others along. And so I, you know, donate an hour or sometimes two every week to helping other entrepreneurs, and particularly those in the impact or, you know, BIPOC minority entrepreneurs as well. And I think it's just something that I truly admire in a leader.
Yeah, that's very cool. Because I think that's, it's not exactly a quote, but one of the kind of statements I try to live by is with power comes responsibility, by which I mean the more privilege or influence you have, in my personal opinion, that means you have more responsibility to use that power and influence for good rather than just for destructive, selfish means. So as you grow in your career or as you get recognition or whatever, why not lift everyone else up with you? The kind of rising tide lifts all boats kind of theory.
Totally. Totally agree.
Awesome. So wrap up, final question. Because this podcast is called Brands for a Better World, what does better for the world mean to you?
Better for the world to me means that we aren't extracting resources, that we're replenishing everything that we take. And so we think about that from a, you know, replenishing and rejuvenating in the communities that we source from. We think about that from, you know, packaging sense, like you said, our recycling system is broken. So how do we upcycle plastic water bottles? And then we think about that from a consumer sense of like, how do we really have high quality products to like genuinely make people feel better? And so I think that's what it means to be a brand for a better world is you're constantly giving more than you take.
That's a great definition. I love it. Sweet. So appreciate you carving out some of your time to give back to the community by sharing your story here with us today. And of course, for doing all that you do to try to make the world better, like beyond, you know, trying to bring a better for the world product to market, you're also using your business to try to make positive change in the world too. So I appreciate all that you're doing out there. And I'm excited to continue watching your journey as it unfolds.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Cheers. Thanks for listening. To learn more about Lisa or her business, visit CooleyCooleyFoods.com or find them on social media at CooleyCooleyFoods. If you like this show, remember to help us grow by liking, reviewing, and sharing. If you're new here, don't forget we have over 100 episodes in the archive. Some might be called Evolve CPG, but it's the same show. So dig in for more goodness. If you consider yourself an impact-driven professional, join me over at impactdriven.community, where we're supporting each other's growth as impact leaders.